Okay, then let's continue with the lesson about edge extraction. Last day we talked about several edge detectors. In particular, we talked about the shovel detector and the canny detector that you need to program on the practical labs, and about detection of points where the gradient is a maximum, presents a maximum. Then let's suppose that we are now in slide number 21. We have already obtained from an input image, for example using the canny detector, we have obtained points that correspond to edges in the image. Okay? And now we want to, after this information, we would like to obtain lines, straight lines or curved lines, for example, ellipses representing the objects that are in the scene. This is one of the topics that we will talk today. First, let's study the second main technique to detect edge points. That is a technique that uses the second derivative of the luminance of the image, of the intensity of the image. The idea is that we can do it quite easily computing the Laplacian of the image. Same as with the gradient, the brightness in the image is a function of two variables, the row and the column in the image. Then, for computing the second derivative, we will use the Laplacian, we will compute the Laplacian of the image, that is the sum of the second derivative with respect to the horizontal axis plus the second derivative with respect to the vertical axis. Okay? Then, for example, the first term can be computed with this second difference operator, and 1 minus 2, 1, and same for the vertical derivative. As we need to compute the sum of the two second derivatives, this is equivalent to apply directly this Laplacian operator. If you sum up these two kernels, you will get the 3 by 3 kernel you have on the left. An operator for the Laplacian a little more precise is the one that is on the right with a minus 20 in the center. Then to the input image we can apply a Laplacian operator and we'll have the image of the Laplacian of the original image. And then we need to search for zero crossings in the Laplacians. It means where the Laplacian of the image crosses suddenly the zero value. One important property of zero crossings is that zero crossings gives contours that are closed and connected. Any idea why? There's a simple, intuitive way of thinking on it. Imagine that the Laplacian represents the height in the surface of the Earth. Okay? And we look for zero crossings of the height. Zero crossings of the height is where the height is zero, it means the coast. Okay? The sea level is the zero. Okay? The points where you can find the crossing between land and water are the zero crossings, and this is the coast that is always connected and a closed contour, maybe quite big as a continent, but it's always closed. Okay? Then the zero crossings are the borders, are the waterline in our, is the coast of our Laplacian image. Then they must be closed and connected. Well, this is in theory. In practice, things are not as nice. The problem is that The second derivative, computing the Laplacian, supposes to amplify the noise twice as much as if we were using a gradient operator. Always computing a derivative will amplify the underlying noise in our image. If we are computing second derivatives, we amplify the noise twice. Then it's mandatory to add some smoothing to the Laplacian operator. It's not a good idea to apply these Laplacian operators as they are written here, but the most usual way to apply the Laplacian is shown here in the next slide, is composing the Laplacian with a Gaussian filter. This is called the Mark-Hildred operator. The Mark-Hildred operator is exactly that. To the image, we can apply a Gaussian filter and then compute the second derivative, the Laplacian of the result. And this is equivalent, remember that convolutions is an associative operation. This is equivalent to apply this joint operator, that is known as the Mark-Hildred operator, to the original image. Okay? And this operator, the values in the convolution kernel can be obtained with this expression, where R represents the distance to the center of the kernel. If you give values for R, for example, between minus 4 and 4, you get this kind of plot. The Mark-Hildred operator has negative value in the center of the kernel, then positive value around 2 sigmas on the left and on the right. This plot is for sigma value equal to 1. Then around 2 sigma values, plus minus 2 sigma values, the operator has positive values, and then tend again to 0 when we go far from the center of the mass. This is known as the Mexican hat operator. If you imagine this plot three-dimensional with revolution symmetry around the center, is like a Mexican hat but put upside down. Okay, and sigma is related to the size of the hat. Actually, the value between the points where the function crosses the zero, this separation is 2 square root of 2 times sigma. Okay, then, if we compute this convolution kernel and we apply it to our original image, we will obtain a Laplacian, the Laplacian of the image, but filtered with a Gaussian filter of magnitude the value chosen for sigma. Then the next step is, in this Laplacian image, try to find the zero crossings, the pixels where there is a zero crossing, and this will be the points that will be marked as edge points. Well, for doing that, this is the simplest algorithm shown here in the next slide. This simple algorithm simply looks for each pixel and their neighbors, their neighbors on the right and on below the pixel. If we are interested in knowing if pixel ij is a contour pixel, we simply look at the value of the result of the Laplacian operator, for example, and first case will be pixel ij is positive, and then the pixel on the right is negative. Okay? This is the first case. In this case, this means there is a zero crossing. First case is comparing with the pixel in the next row. If our current pixel is positive and the pixel on the next row is negative, it means that there is a zero crossing in the vertical direction, Okay? And then this variable, mag y, represents the magnitude of this zero crossing in vertical. Okay? The second case is the case that you have a negative value on the right. This means that there is a zero crossing, an horizontal zero crossing, and we also compute the magnitude of the horizontal zero crossing. And the other two cases are the cases where the current pixel is negative and you have positive values either on the next row or on the next column. Okay? And in this case you have also, you can compute also the magnitude of these zero crossings. Finally, the magnitude of the zero crossing at the current pixel is the maximum of the magnitudes computed in horizontal or vertical. Okay? Then typically, if this magnitude is below a certain threshold value, we'll mark the pixel ij as a contour pixel. And that's it. Easy? Okay. This is the result of doing this computation. The first, second, and third drawings represent the same result with different values for the Gaussian filter applied to the image. Then look at the third image, for example. This is the result of the zero crossing of the Mark-Hildred operator with sigma equal to 3. Then if you look at these zero crossings, you can see that actually the boundaries, the zero crossings, form closed contours and connected. If you look, for example, here on the table, you can see here around an elongated contour that is closed and connected. There is no pixel missing in the contours. In other cases, it's not that clear. For example, if you look at the leg of the table, here you can find also a closed contour that begins, start here, goes along the table, and maybe closes for in the outside of the image. Okay? Same here. Here you have a closed contour, comes here, and probably ends up around the monitor and ends up again, closes outside the image. Okay? Well, you can see also that in all three cases, even using a Gaussian filter, there is very much noise in the result. There are many zero crossings that do not correspond to anything interesting in the image. Okay? This is why you always need to apply a threshold. Zero crossings where the magnitude is small, typically in flat areas in the image, have to be discarded using a threshold value. Otherwise, if you try to compute anything with this kind of results, you will get crap results. Okay, but look that this kind of technique potentially will give a very similar result that the edge that you can obtain with the gradient operator. In the case of gradient operator, you compute the gradient of the image, you can apply thresholds, we will talk a little more about thresholds on the next slides, and you mark the points where there is a maximum of the gradient, and you can store the value of the gradient. This is the magnitude of your edge in each pixel. Here it's the same. You find zero crossings of the second derivative, and you store the magnitude of the zero crossing. Okay? Then, as a result, you will get an image with several points detected as edge points, and you have stored the magnitude of these edges that you will use later for the thresholds. Okay, this takes us to the next problem, that is contour segmentation. Suppose you have already detected edge points, and now you want to group these edge points to obtain meaningful elements like straight lines or curves. You want also to remove noise in the contours, to eliminate as much as possible the noisy contours in your image. Well, typically there are two big classes of techniques to do contour segmentation. First technique is local analysis. That is the technique that you will use in the seventh practical lab. That consists in following, starting with a contour pixel, try to find neighboring contour pixel, what is called contour following, and doing that using a threshold to reject contour points that are not meaningful in our image. Once we have followed the contours, we will try to obtain lines or curves from this change of contours that we have detected. This is a local technique because it starts with a pixel and tries to find neighboring pixels belonging to the same contour. There is another class of techniques that are more global, that try to find, for example, lines in a global way, looking at the whole image. You will see one kind of these techniques, that is the half transform. Then let's start first with the local type of techniques. First important idea is that we need to use threshold values to reject points that are not meaningful for our application. The problem is that a threshold value is always difficult to tune up, to choose the right value for the threshold. Our goal will be to obtain change of edge points that have a certain intensity, and the intensity corresponds to the magnitude of the gradient or the magnitude of the zero crossing, depending on the technique we have used on the first step. Okay? Then here you have in this slide number 27, you have two examples of what happens. For example, if you choose a threshold value of 8 and you keep the edge points where the magnitude is bigger or equal to 8, you typically you can eliminate most of the noise in the image, but typically there happens in some places you can get some broken contours. Difficult to see in this example. This case is pretty good. Not easy to detect a broken contour here. Okay, on the right picture, if you try to get more contours than on the left, on the right, if you take a smaller value for the threshold, a threshold value of 4, you get much more noise, longer contours in general, more details, but also more noise in the result. Well, the idea of hysteresis thresholding is try to combine the benefits of these two values, for example, of the value of 4 and the value of 8. The idea of hysteresis thresholding is require that look at a contour chain as a whole. A contour chain is a set of pixels that are connected, and all of them can be considered edge points. Then for a contour chain as a whole, we will require that all pixels in the chain have a magnitude bigger than the smaller threshold value, in this case 4, okay? And at least one pixel on the chain should have a magnitude bigger or equal than the higher value, in this case 8, okay? Then the result that you get is the one that that is in this picture, where the contours are bigger in general, there are much less broken contours that if you used simply the value of 4, but most of the noise is eliminated from the image. Okay? Then it is also possible to add another constraint, for example, that the number of pixels in each chain must be bigger than, say, 30. Okay? In this case, smaller contours like the one in the floor in the left picture can be easily removed because they are, in this case, smaller than this threshold value. Okay? Well, typically, you still will need to tune the values of the thresholds that are correct for your application, and they may depend on the brightness of your image and the contrast you have in your image. Okay? Then for the 7th practical lab, you need to invest some time in finding which are the correct values for the kind of images that you need to process in this lab. Typically, the upper threshold value is chosen around the double of the lower threshold value. Then if you try 5 for the lower threshold, you can try 10 for the upper threshold, and maybe try different values until you are satisfied with the results. Same with the length. If you put a threshold on the left that is very high, too high, you will remove interesting details in the image. For example, here the posters will be easily removed if you put values higher than 100. But if you don't want to remove these values, you need to keep the minimal length on reasonable values. Okay? Well, and once we have decided two values for the small and high threshold, we can apply them inside the contour following algorithm. The idea is we want to obtain chains that where these two properties are true, all pixels have magnitude higher than the lower threshold, and at least one with magnitude higher than the high threshold. How can be achieved easily in a contour following algorithm? Here you have, in next slide, you have an example of this kind of algorithm. The idea here is just we will try to start a new contour chain only when we find one pixel that is bigger than the high threshold. In our example, we look for a value bigger than 8, and from this pixel we start looking for new pixels belonging to the same contour chain. Okay? Then the procedure get changed simply goes along all the image looking for starting points where the magnitude of this starting point is bigger than the upper threshold. Okay? When this procedure finds one pixel with this magnitude, it starts calls to the follow procedure that will continuously try to find neighboring pixels to this one to complete the chain. Okay? When this will call the follow procedure, but usually it happens that you start with one pixel, continue searching neighbors in one direction, but usually you have another half of the contour in the other direction. Okay? This can be done simply reversing the chain of points that you have already found and trying again to find neighbors of the first pixel in the other direction. Okay, you need to reverse the first chain in order to obtain a chain of pixels that is ordered. Okay, that inside a contour chain, each pixel will be neighbor of the preceding pixel and of the next pixel. Okay? And then, when this second following operation will finish, if the chain, the contour chain you have found, has a number of pixels bigger than our example value that was 30, you simply store the chain and continue looking for other starting pixels. If you look at the follow procedure, this procedure simply, from the current pixel, will try to add pixels to the chain that are neighbors of this current one. Then this procedure simply uses this helping next procedure, simply stores the current pixel, clears up the pixel to avoid counting as the same pixel in several different chains, okay, and then try to find the next neighbor of the current pixel. And finally, the function next, the next pixel returns also a pixel. What this function does is to try all the neighbors of the current pixel. Usually we are talking of 8 neighbors. Okay? And if the magnitude of this next pixel is bigger than the lower threshold, it's a valid contour point, it will return the pixel found. Okay? And if any of the 8 neighbors has a magnitude bigger than the lower threshold, the function returns nil, and then the follow function will know that this side of the contour is end up at the current pixel. Okay? Then it's, as you can imagine, it's quite easy algorithm to implement. There is an important detail here hidden in the next function, that is that the order in which the neighbors are tried can have some importance on the result. The idea is, of the 8 neighbors, there are some that are better than others. You can see the case in this example in slide number 30. Suppose that you try the different neighbors in the usual order, the reading order, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, that order. And suppose you are trying to find the next pixel of this one. Okay? Then 1, 2, 3 will be on top of the current pixel. None of them is a contour pixel. This one is 4, nothing, 5, nothing, and then it goes to the 6th neighbor. Okay? Then from this, we go to this pixel. From the second pixel, if we try in this order, we'll go to the 5th neighbor. Okay? And then, if this pixel happens to be missing, this contour will be broken at this point. And then we will start another contour in this pixel and repeat again the pattern. Okay? If you look at these arrows, the problem here is that the neighbors are not always advancing in the direction of the edge, of the line in this case. We advance, but we go back a little when we go to the second, to the third neighbor. Okay? This can be easily avoided if, when looking for neighbors, we look first for the 4 neighbors and then for the 8th neighbors. Okay? Then the second ordering is better. If you start here, you will try first 1, 2, 3, 4, and we'll go to the fourth neighbor. From this one, you will try 1, 2, and we'll go to the second neighbor. And in this case, if the white pixel there is missing, okay, you will try first the fourth neighbors, and none of them is a contour pixel in this case. And then you will try five, six, seven, and in this case the seventh one is a good neighbor. Okay? In this case, you can see that the arrows always go, always advance in the direction of the straight line. You never go back. Then you have not the risk of broken in the contour as with the first idea. Yes, please. Yeah.
Go back to the second and continue with the rest of the neighbors.
No, this is. Yes, you could do that, but this in general is not a good idea, because what you want to obtain is a chain, a one-dimensional structure, where each pixel is neighbor of the next and of the former pixel. If you go back one or two pixels and find new neighbors of this pixel, you will get a tree structure. Okay? That is much more complicated to manage afterwards to obtain lines. And you don't want that. Okay? And probably the algorithm will be much more complicated. In general, in most images, you will have parts of the image that have Y junctions or even T junctions or other kind of connectivity between lines. Okay? With this technique, if you have a Y junction, you will get two different chains. For example, you go here and the algorithm happens to choose this branch, you will get one contour here. And the second one will start afterwards, for example, in this pixel, and you will get a second contour there. Okay? This is no big problem, because at the end, what you want is to have three lines. Okay? Then some of the splitting is already done. Okay? Same in a T-junction. You can, with this algorithm, you can get two different contours. And it can be this case or this other case. Okay? In this case, at the end, we will get two different lines. But in this case, at the end, we will get three different lines. If we prefer this solution, then a way to obtain longer contours is when trying to find neighbors, not only use the four neighbor first, but also try to continue on the same direction where you came. Okay? Then, if you come here in this direction, try first the neighbors that more or less correspond to the direction of the preceding pixels. If you do that in a T junction, you will choose the right path on the T, instead of going in a square angle. Okay? Is that clear? It's an additional optimization that if you want, you could implement on the seventh practical lab, but it's not mandatory, as you wish. This one is a good idea, using this, I mean, the price is the same, using one order or the other costs more or less the same programming, and the results could be better in many cases. Taking into account the direction of the advance of the contour is a little more complicated, maybe. Not much more complicated. Probably it's programming 10 lines of code. But it's not that easy to find the right 10 lines. Okay? Okay. Then this is for the first part. We suppose that we have obtained a change of points, change of contours, where each pixel is neighbor of the preceding and the next pixel inside the chain. Okay. One important implementation issue. We are talking about change of contours. Of course, when you start processing an image, you will have in the same image, you will have chains that are very long and chains that are short. Okay? Then you will know, you don't know at the start how many chains you will have exactly and how long they will be. First idea from for a computer science engineer is always, well, I don't know the size of the memory of the variables I need to store things, then maybe a chain can be represented with a list, and a list programmed using pointers. Bad idea. Okay? Very bad idea. Why? Any idea why? Sorry? Performance is a big issue if you use pointers. If you use pointers in a naive way, I would say. Because for each contour point, you need to do a new to reserve an area of memory to store that point belonging to a contour. Okay? If you have 100,000 points in an image that are contour points, you need 100,000 news calls to the new function inside your code. That takes a lot of time. Of course, you can do more serious memory management and store and reserve memory by bunches or whatever, but this complicates the code maybe necessarily. Second problem is that if you reserve dynamic memory and your program is running in a cycle, you need to return the memory to the operating system when you need to process the next image. Okay? This operation is also quite expensive and typically is not very reliable. Some compilers do actually return the memory, some others don't. Or even if you forget to return a small part of the memory you have used, after running the program 10,000 times, the memory of your computer is gone. Okay? This is the first reason of stopping of final projects in computer science. Okay? In robotics, for example, typically you run a program for computing for controlling a robot with using a camera. You run the program, 5 minutes, it works. Okay, the program is correct. It's not that rare that after half an hour running, the program simply stops. Okay? First guess, it's a wrong pointer. Always. If you simply forgot to return to the operating system a portion of the memory in your code, after running the code 10,000 times, your memory is gone and the computer stops. Okay? Then, for this kind of applications, it's much more efficient and much more reliable to use static memory. You can allocate it dynamically if you want, but simply use an array. Okay? It's very easy to know the maximum possible dimension of this array. The worst case is that all pixels in an image are contour points. Then if you store all the contour points in an array, the maximum number of points you need is the size of your image. Dot. That's it. Okay? And then, if you put the pixels there in order, you don't need to store which one is the neighbor of which one. You store them in order, on another point that is gone. Okay? And the only thing you need is to remember each chain at which element of the array starts and at which element ends. And that's it. Then, with an array with all contour points and indexes to that array signaling where each chain starts and where it ends, it's enough. Okay? This gives much more efficiency. Another reason is that all the elements will be in a compact area of the memory, and this area will be on the cache of the processor. Much better than using news that sometimes will try to find different areas in the main memory to store your values. Okay? Well, let's stop here for 10 minutes.